Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Stand clear.
Hey, welcome everybody. It's another episode of Dr. Homebrew. We're here answering your homebrew questions in the form of bottled homebrew. So if you have a question that you want to ask, brew the question up, mail it to us, and we'll drink it and verify if you were correct or not. I don't know what any of this means.
We may get a puzzling look on our face, a puzzled look. I sense the question mark in that.
Yeah, for sure. Now I understand what's happening, and it was weird the whole time. No, we are here. We have a cool show for you. We're drinking a kvass.
Kvass.
Is that? Did I get that right? Kvass.
That's right. Yep.
Because I think I said kvass last time, and either I'm from the South, or I just like saying ass. But no, it's the name of the beer. I mean, I don't know. It's the thing.
Doesn't rhyme with that.
Yeah. I've always heard it said kvass, but I'm not Russian, so I could be wrong.
Well, look, at this point, who cares? It is what it is. We'll figure that out a little bit later. And then after we drink the kvass with Brian here, it's another Council of Brian's show. We're going to be speaking with John Moorhead about this year's NHC and HomebrewCon and what's going on with that, and give you all the details that we know for sure straight from the source. So that should be a good time. And I'm excited about it, man. I don't know, man. HomebrewCon, I missed it last year. I thought that would have been cool. In Nashville, I think it was supposed to be, and I think we've talked about it before. I really desperately want to go to Nashville.
We were going to Dollywood afterwards.
Oh, man. I was just going to eat hot chicken and have diarrhea for 4 days. That's all I was going to do.
The two aren't incompatible, Jamie.
Well, I don't know. I feel like having diarrhea at Dollywood would be very hard to do. But, yeah. Anyway, so I was disappointed about that.
Shrimps.
Yeah. But also, I don't know. I was, I'm looking forward to when we can get out and kind of hang out a little bit more. I'm starting to get the tourism itch. You know what I mean?
You Amen. Are, JP? I mean, seriously?
Yeah, I know. And it's really just to break up the monotony. Like, being home, being a homebody's cool, right? It's awesome. Everyone loves it. But for a year, that's a long time. Like, 10 months, that's perfect. But a year, I don't know, man. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, who knows? I think at some point we got to talk about the future of this show as far as how long are we Zooming? At least for another few months. But at some point soon, maybe we'll actually be breathing on each other again.
Yeah.
Boys?
I just got my second dose of Pfizer vaccine on Monday.
And how you feel?
I feel good right now.
Yeah.
It was funny. Almost 12 hours to the dot after I got it.
Yeah.
I was like, I stood up like, whoa, I have chills and I don't feel great. And thankfully it was bedtime and my fiance put me to bed and she said, no, you got to go to bed now. And I felt kind of bad all night and intermittently bad the next day. But I'm feeling pretty good now. I mean, it's kind of like any flu vaccine sometimes.
Yeah.
It just means that with the second shot, it means that your immune system is working really good because it recognizes the intruder. And makes a whole bunch of antibodies, and it's working overtime, and it's getting it done.
Yeah, well...
Oh, let's kill that. Yeah.
Exactly.
The way I figured that is there's enough time for the Bill Gates chip to really embed itself in your spine.
Gosh.
That's right. But I didn't have any... I had slim side effects in my first one. My second one, I had none. I was just like, all right. So maybe I'm not immune. Is that what you're saying, Brian?
I'm on Moderna. This is my side effect, this little red dot. My arm was sore a little bit.
Yeah,
see,
whatever.
I have like a little bump-ish like right here or so. Oh. So
They gave you a tattoo while you went through the drive-thru?
No, I had that before.
Brian Shard has a tattoo? And tell me it's like it's a Romulan or something, right?
No, this is a Starfleet Voyager era comm badge.
I fucking knew it.
I got a Starfleet Voyager comm badge with like a nebula background.
I knew it was something.
Because Voyager is the best of the Star Treks.
I knew.
And I wanted to have myself a Voyager era comm badge.
I knew it was something. I knew it was something Star Trek. I knew it.
Of course.
I knew it. How long have you had that?
Like maybe a year and a half or so.
Oh, damn. Okay, cool. We'll have to see it in person because right now it just looks like a big blob.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I need to wear a shirt that I could pull up better a little further so you could see it a little better.
Well, just strip. I mean, I don't care. It's Facebook. There's only, you know, 14 people watching.
That's true. I mean, it's just kind of... I do need to probably post this to Facebook at some point, but yeah, there you probably see it a little better.
Cause yeah, a little bit. There you go.
There's very the cool. comm badge, and you have a nebula back there behind it. So.
Did you see Star Trek Picard? Did you watch that show?
Yes.
I liked it a lot. I was a Star Trek Next Generation or whatever it is kid. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I liked it. I liked Picard. I liked it. It was cool. I'm not really a Star Trek guy, but I think Star Trek Picard was better than The Mandalorian.
I might agree with you that Picard's a little better, you know, because I'm just a huge Star Trek fan. But Picard was great in that you didn't have to have watched any of the original Next Generation or anything. It did stand alone pretty well. So even if you weren't that familiar, if you were more familiar with it, you got more out of it. But I think it played pretty well on its own.
Yeah, I agree.
Patrick Stewart is a cool dude. I mean, he's a great actor.
He's a cool dude.
Really, really just commands your attention. So yeah. there you go.
And that whole time.
Mandalorian was still better. I haven't seen Picard. I might watch it someday. But
Well, you can't say it's better than the thing you haven't seen.
It was definitely better.
That whole time I watched Picard, I was like, God, I wonder what it's like to kiss him. I wonder if he's like a good... like he feels like a giving kisser, right? Like yeah. just, you know? But also bad at the same time.
My daughter are now marching through Next Generation.
Me
which
too.
She hasn't seen yet.
I'm doing the same
season
thing.
Season one is kind of a garbage dump, so we're just kind of powering through season one as fast as we can.
Yeah.
There are some good episodes in season one in retrospect, but by and large, it is a garbage dump.
Yeah, for sure.
They had their growing pains.
Yeah, absolutely. Like anything, man, anything. I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break before I forget to do that. We're going to come back. We have Brian here with a kvass beer, which I don't know that I've ever had before, you know, so I'm pretty excited to learn a little bit about this brand new style to me. Anyway, this is Dr. Homebrew, everyone. Hang on, we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging around. I'm about to pop this bottle of kvass and welcome Brian on the show. Brian, welcome to the Council of Brians, led by Jason.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Welcome back. Just curious, though, what did you sanitize and clean your equipment with when you were doing your brewing process? Just curious.
That's never a good thing to hear.
I was trying to segue into our sponsor, which I don't think we mentioned.
Our fine sponsor,
well,
Five Stars.
W and Star Sand.
There we go.
Is that good?
That's perfect.
Five Star.
You did
right?
great. Go to 5starchemicals.com and learn everything you need to do to remind me to mention Five Star, because, of course, everybody else is smarter than me, so they already know to use 5-Star, but I need to be reminded all the time to talk about it. So go to 5starchemicals.com. Email them, follow them on social media, thank them for supporting the show, tell them that you really, really appreciate it, because they're the ones who make this show happen. So thank you to 5-Star very much. Thank you for keeping our beers clean. I still haven't brewed again. I need to do some more home brewing, man.
Yeah.
And mainly because I have you know, 5 pounds of stars a PBW in my and, you know, okay, so I've been working with PBW and Star Sam, I think, since it came out. You know, we're doing more beer. We had the Iota 4.
Yeah.
Then, you know, PBW came out and Star Stain came out. And we're like, oh, what's this? This is really cool. It doesn't stain your fingers and your equipment or whatever. And I still confuse PBW and Star Stain. Just constantly. Luckily, not in use, but just verbally.
Yeah.
It's like, It's like there's a casino in Pacheco called the California Grand. But there's a hotel in Disneyland called the Grand Californian. And I have never used the proper word, the right one, right? I've never called one thing the thing that it is. I call the hotel the casino and the casino the, because it's just interchangeable. Same thing with Star Sand and PBW. It's the same thing. Means the same thing to me. I know what's different about them, but when I'm talking about them, it's what it is. So anyway, thanks to Five Star.
Yeah. Kvass, on the other hand, is a whole new thing to me. I have no idea.
Yeah, so Brian, talk about Kvass. Is this the first time you've made this beer style?
This is the first time I've made a Kvass, yes. I've tried some that were commercial. I was actually in Ukraine at one point, and that's where I first tried Kvass. And I've had some since I've been back in the States. So I don't know if you want me to tell you a little bit what I know. Or
yeah, please.
You just go into tasting it or what you want to do?
I don't know. What do you guys want to do?
I think an intro would serve us well.
Let's do a little intro.
So Kvass can or cannot be considered actually a beer. Traditionally, it was made from, say, leftover bread that you would have. And you would soak that dried bread, and that would kind of be your mash. And get sugars out of that dried bread.
Have these people never heard of croutons? I mean, let's go.
You know, it was kind of a farmer's thing where it's like, well, what do we have available to make some beer-like stuff? So that's where Kvass comes from. It's traditionally rye bread, so it's going to be a darker drink. So this one I made was with rye bread as well.
Okay. Do you bake the rye bread specifically for this, or is it truly like leftover rye bread?
Traditionally, it would just be leftover bread. Yeah. Now, you could make your own just for the purpose of making a kvass. In my case, I had bought some rye bread, and I let it dry out, and I used that.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah, I mean, I'm tasting it right now. It's very sort of right up my alley. And what kind of good. Let's get into the beer. Let's do the beer, and then I want to ask some questions about tasting and stuff.
I'll tell you, too, the first time I had it, I did not like it. I was in Ukraine to adopt my daughter. This was probably about 17 years ago, and was trying all the local stuff. And Kvass is a pretty big deal in Russia and Russian-influenced countries, so I had to have it. And it's kind of weird because it comes in these 2-liter soda bottles and kind of looks like a soft drink, like Coca-Cola, but it's not sweet. It doesn't taste like soda at all.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really taste like beer to me. I don't know. It's really hard to describe, but I didn't care for it the first time I had it. I don't even know if I finished the bottle. I just pitched it. But over time, I got more and more interested. There was a little Russian store near where I work, and I would go in and buy things that were Russian or Ukrainian to bring home and let the family try. So I was like, well, let's give Kvass another try. And it kind of grew on me. So I thought,
maybe one day
I'll make a Kvass.
Yeah, that's cool, man. Yeah. That's cool. All right, Brian Cooper.
All right.
Why don't you go ahead and start us out, brother, on this Kvass.
Okay, I will. So cracked the bottle, had a nice hiss. I guess we're calling it Category 27 Historical Styles, a good place to put it, I suppose, even though it's not specifically called out there and there are no guidelines in the BGCP. I kind of looked around at some online sources. had interesting descriptions for what to say about it. We'll go into that later, but I'm just getting into the aroma. It is it's a very bread-like aroma with crusty and light toasty notes. Not getting any obvious sourness or funkiness in the aroma, and there's no hops. There's some bread yeast like scent definitely in here as well. Not just like the bread graininess, but you know, some yeastiness, like opening, you know, fresh pack of baking yeast and sniffing in there during the COVID apocalypse, baking all those loaves of bread that you do. I did that for a while, and then I just went back to buying it at the store because it's better than mine. But
oh man, I got bread in the oven right now, sandwich bread.
Nice. Oh, awesome. It just took up too much of my Sunday. Anyway, I digress.
You can make a kvass with that, JP.
Yeah, with just plain white sandwich bread.
Kvass bread, yeah.
Yeah.
There's you make it from bread and then make it back into bread, put it in your bread.
Oh, shit. Man, that's crazy.
There's a low spiciness, like grainy, kind of rye-like not hoppy or phenolic spiciness. And if there's any fruity esters here, they're really low. It's not a super fruity smelling beverage at all. Color wise, it's a nice dark, kind of dark amber, nice and clear. Poured a low white head that stuck around moderately well, and faded to kind of a collar, fine, and some larger bubbles and a little cover. Just some striations of light wispy beer foam across the top there. Looks good. Like you said, it looks like it could be a soda of some kind.
It's like a light amber ale almost.
It looks beer like, actually.
Yeah. It really does.
You know,
it kind of throws you off when you taste it, in my opinion, anyway, because you have an expectation of like beer or something, and then you get that little bit of lacto, and it's like, whoa, what is this?
Yeah. So yeah, the flavor, again, it's got a pretty big bready focus, like rye bread, crust, just like the nice top of the crust, medium, low, neutral maltiness alongside that, kind of behind that, I guess. You know, yeah, you have to put malt in it to be able to call it a beer, I guess. So
right.
for them to sell it as a beer beverage, can't just be bread. there is a faint tanginess in here, like a hint of citrus fruit, I would say. But to me, it's fairly backgroundy. I kind of, you know, when I didn't get it in the aroma, it was like, okay, yeah, there is some there, and that's a nice little light minor tang. But it's not super prominent. There's no bitterness or obvious hop in the beer. I mean, there might be a tiny bit of bitterness. It's really low. I mean, although you do get from the spiciness of the rye bread, the bread-like qualities, you get a little bit of an impression of something backing up. It's not sweet. It's pretty, finishes pretty dry, and there's some boldness to it. It's actually, you know, for such a light ABV beverage, it's pretty flavorful. So yeah, the balance is definitely to this bread-like quality that it has, and it finishes with a light little breadiness and tartness in the finish. Not super tart. There's no real funk here to me. It's not like, if I'm looking for a Brettanomyces like funk or something like that, you know, it's described as being a pretty funky smelling beverage, you know, almost sometimes with like feet like, or, you know, with like spoiled, like, you know, gone bad, like, you know, and it doesn't have any of those like negative, like funky things, but it's kind of neutral, and you get the bread and a little bit of tang and you know, some boldness to the flavor, and it dries out, and that's it. And it just lingers in the aftertaste. Mouthfeel wise, medium bodied, medium carbonation, no warmth or astringency. It's not creamy or anything really. I would say it's a fairly mouth filling impression, but also at the same time, it's somewhat quenching, I think, because of that little tart edge in it. So it's kind of unique in that way. But yeah, it's actually, I didn't know what to expect going into this. It's a unique and definitely more enjoyable beverage than I initially feared. seems like from the descriptions I'm reading, maybe it should be a bit more tart. I will rely on Brian's, impressions of what you tasted over there. And I imagine there's probably some variance to that. Definitely, as it's just it's kind of an artisanal product in some ways, I think, too. And everybody makes theirs differently. Probably different regions have different ones.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, some will be more tart than others. Some will have more whatever. I'd like to know what the range is there. And it seems like it'd be fun to explore. But I would personally prefer it a little more tart. I think that would make it a little more refreshing yet, and kind of play off that bread in a nice way.
Yeah.
And a little funk might be kind of fun. But it's, you know, very, it sounds very close to as it's described in various sources, and very bread-like, cool beverage. So I guess just, you know, my advice is just make it a little more kvassy somehow. Cross it up somehow. But you can, I gave it a 38. I thought it was as advertised. It's a kvass.
Brian, are we going to see a kick your own kvass beer in the future, or is that?
Yeah. Pick your own kvass ale.
Yeah. All right, Brian Schaar, let's do it, buddy.
Now all I can think about is that kick your own kvass ale, which sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've never had a kvass before either. And unfortunately, I'd opened this up like right when I got this a while back, and I don't have a bottle in front of me, so I'm not going to probably add a lot to what Brian had said. The aroma is kind of low overall, which you expect for kind of a low gravity beverage like this. Lightly bready, no hop aroma, no esters. The bread is the dominant character, like a rustic brown bread, like you would expect, because that's the primary ingredient of this. I didn't get any sourness in the aroma. Also didn't get any off aromas. Gave it 6 out of 12. Appearance, light brown color, slightly hazy. Low and persistent head, 3 out of 3. Flavor, I thought initially the flavor was a low bready and light sourness. So it certainly wasn't, you know, a goose. But there was some lacto sourness there. No hop flavor, low hop bitterness. It's clearly a sour beer, well attenuated. Balance is toward bread, which is like a sentence I never thought I would write or say. like having a sandwich. I'm down at Luigi's. Yeah, the balance is toward the bread.
Luigi's is good.
Finish is medium long and bready. So a 13 out of 20 on that. Thought the body was medium, low carbonation, no warming, creamy. I think I wanted a little more carbonation in this, but ultimately 4 out of 5. Overall impression 7 for a total of 33. This is an interesting beverage I've never had a chance to try. On the one hand, I expected more sourness, but then not everything has to be Cantillon that is sour. And I think this is probably sour to an appropriate level.
Mm-hmm.
Brian, you would know that better than us because you've had this before. So you kind of know the degree of sourness that should be there. Thanks. I have a note. You know, thanks for sharing, which is I do thank you for that. But I also didn't get like the caraway seed note from what we think of as rye bread. It's not required to be there, but that's an interesting thing that, you know, at least as Americans, we associate the flavor of rye bread more with caraway than with rye, because that's the spice that gives it that quote rye flavor. And that's probably not something they do in Russia. I mean, it's probably more of a European American thing to put in your rye bread.
Yeah, that's a good question. Right. Is that appropriate? Would you get kicked out of the country for putting caraway in your glass?
No idea.
Now we expect you to be the expert just because you went there once and, you know, yeah, spent some time.
I can tell you what I put in the kvass. That's about it.
Let's talk about that. I'd love to hear it. What did you give it, Brian?
I gave it a 33.
Okay. It was kind of hard to know where to put it, but it kind of hit most of the marks. Yeah. So I'm like, hey, you know.
Agreed.
I realize it was kind of a stretch to be able to judge it since there's no BJCP guidelines on kvass. So what can you do? Yeah,
right.
I can go over the recipe if you'd
like.
Yeah,
please do.
So 6 pounds of rye bread. So I bought some organic rye bread and dried that out, and that went into the mash. And I also had 2 pounds of pale malt I put in there, and 12 ounces of rye malt and 12 ounces of special B. Oh. Sometimes the kvass will have raisin in it, so I did add some raisin, but I thought the special B might give it a little bit of that kind of character as well.
Wait, how much special B did you say? 12 ounces?
12 ounces, yeah.
Wow, that's a lot of special B, and I don't recall tasting that much special B in there, even though it's been a while. Interesting.
Had some rice hulls just to help with the, you know, going through the mash and not having to get stuck.
Yeah, you had a lot of rye in there.
Hops, I had 1 ounce of Lubelski hops, which is a Polish hop, and it's kind of related to Czech saaz. The yeast was a T58 Belgian dry yeast, and I made a soured wort to give it kind of that tartness. So that was 8 ounces of DME mixed with 3 ounces of unmilled grain, and you let that sit at like 90 to 100 degrees for a few days and get that souring character. And really smelled like the the cream corn DMS kind of thing you always read about. It was very strong, but you know, poured that into the boil kettle, so it gave it some flavor, and that was it. I also had 2 grams of ground black and other kind of peppers in there. The recipe called for grains of paradise, which I don't have any of that, but it's basically different kinds of pepper that you grind up. So I found a mixed thing of like red, white, and black peppercorns and ground up 2 grams of that. And like I said, I put 2 ounces of raisins in secondary.
Okay.
There was definitely like a phenolic spice in there. It wasn't like a sharp pepperiness in any sense to me, but it was just, there was something spicy. Yeah, maybe, you know.
Could have been the Belgian yeast.
The rye and the Belgian yeast and the pepper combining and giving an interesting spiciness behind the bread there. So not caraway, but yeah, interesting. Yeah,
Brian, I want to go back a little bit when you said you put that sour mash in the boil kettle. Was that something you put in at like 100 degrees for kettle souring, or did you put it in like during the boil to kill the bugs?
It was right at the boil to kill it.
Okay, gotcha.
So you get a little bit of that tartness, but it's definitely not supposed to be funky or anything like that. It's just a little bit of puckering for you.
Nice.
Okay. And is a Belgian yeast a common one that's used in recipes for this that you've seen, or what made you choose that? I mean, it worked nicely for you, but.
Yeah, you know, reading that Lars Garshall book, it'd probably be appropriate to use a just like a standard baker's bread yeast. But the Belgian yeast is one that the AHA called out. They had a recipe online, and I kind of took that as my guideline. So yeah, sounded good to me.
I've never been brave enough to ferment beer with bread yeast.
No, I don't want to do that either.
I would like the result on that.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to try it, though, with the small batch and just see where it goes, you know.
Yeah, the AHA, I think they called it the Czar's Kvass, if you want to look that up. And theirs was a little bit more malt forward. I think theirs was about 4% alcohol. Mine came out to be 2.5%.
Yeah, it's very light, but very flavorful. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
Fun.
Yeah, I like it, man. It is definitely interesting. I don't know that I could drink 2 liters of it.
you want to get a 2 liter
no
Coke bottle?
So how does it compare to the ones that you had in Ukraine?
To be honest, it's been so long, it's hard to know exactly. Yeah. But I will say that we have a brewery here in Nashville called Yazoo. You may have heard of them.
Oh yeah.
And they came out with a kvass recently, kind of a small batch thing. So I bought that and really enjoyed it and compared it side by side with mine. And I thought mine was pretty comparable. I mean, they use a different yeast than I did, so it had some different components. But by and large, it was very similar.
Okay.
Would you make this again?
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I would. I mean, it's not something I'm going to drink every day, but it does have a cool kind of thirst-quenching aspect with that little bit of tartness. So I enjoyed it, and it's really nice that you can drink 4 or 5 and not even feel it because it's so low in alcohol.
Yeah.
In fact, you can find commercials for commercial kvass like on YouTube or something, and they show parents, you know, giving it to their kids at a picnic because it's 1 or 2%. It's not even considered alcoholic.
Sure.
Yeah, it's like the Kinder beer, you know, Germany kind of thing. Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
God, what a country. I like it. There is that sweetness sort of lingers a little bit longer than I would like, and maybe that's what's affecting like how much I would drink of this, but I'm going to finish the bottle. I think it's very good. It's interesting. It's very interesting.
Well, if anybody in the chat knows of a good source for grains of paradise, you could point us in the right direction for that.
I think more beer has them, like most homebrew shops.
I've seen them here and there. Yeah,
yeah.
I found where I could buy some, but it was really, really expensive, and when I read about what it was, I was like, well, it's just peppercorns. I can do peppercorns.
Probably.
I think you did great,
somewhere.
Man. Yeah. Brian, do you have anything else for the Council of Brian's or vice versa?
No, just really wanted to see what you thought and if you would do anything different. I would probably maybe even make it a little more sweet if I made it again, but just everybody has their preference.
I didn't think it was too sweet. It felt pretty it dried off nicely, and it left the bread shining through. A little sweetness might accent the bread and give it a little more fullness too, which is kind of nice. It's supposed to be kind of full, I guess, in the mouthfeel, which, you know, not like a barley wine full, but for such a light beer, it carries a fair amount of weight and just everything that's in there. So Yeah. It's hard to give you a lot of real specific feedback, but I think,
it's just for fun.
Yeah. Follow your instinct and just experiment around with it and have some fun.
What do you think you're going to do differently next time? Because I'm sure you'll make it again, right? Or maybe you won't. I don't know.
I would like to bake my own bread next time just to make it more homemade homebrew than this time since I bought the rye bread. So I think that would be fun to do your own bread and take it from the oven to the beer.
Well, and I wonder if, you know, you have the commercial, well, you said it was organic, but there are, you know, organic, you know, preservers in there. And I wonder if you strip it down to just flour and yeast and water. And then maybe whatever you want to put in there. I wonder if that'll affect the flavor a little bit more. I don't know. You know what I mean? Commercial bread versus homemade bread. Well, you get like those extra.
You got the bread, so you can make one and let us know.
I'll do it. Sounds good to me. All right, Brian. Well, if that's it, we'll let you go, man.
Very good. Well, thank you.
Cool. All right.
Appreciate
thanks, man.
The feedback.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you. Appreciate you sending
this
in.
We'll have you on the next show, too, here. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Might be seeing you again very soon.
Cool.
All right. See y'all soon.
Yeah, thanks, man. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to get back on the line here with John Moorhead talking about HomebrewCon and NHC this year and what we can expect from that moving forward. Hang on, everybody. It's Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
Ma'am, I'll need to take your top off for this examination.
Oh, doctor.
All right, thanks for sticking around, everybody. Welcome, John Moorhead from the Brewers Association. Okay, yeah. I just want to make sure
American Home Brewers Association.
There you go, yeah, because I get my acronyms. We cover this in the beginning of the show. I have names in my head, and I've been doing this for so long that like they just, it's all the same, and I just always question whatever I do. So anyway, John, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Usually when I see him on the stage, it's usually at HomebrewCon, some other festival.
Like weird suit.
Yeah,
exactly.
Bow tie, right? Yeah.
Well, and it's also been a year since I've had to even think of those acronyms anymore. You know what I mean? And it's usually because we have GABF, we have NHC, we have HomebrewCon, we have these things to sort of like keep us in the loop, and we've been out of it for a year, so it's almost like starting over again.
Yeah, man, brand recognition. It's a real thing. You say John with the AHA, part of the BA, he runs the NHC and HBC. It also helps the GABF. Yeah. It takes a little while to get used to
it. Yeah, it does, man, for sure. But, hey, I appreciate you taking your time in the evening to come on and talk to us a little bit about this. So totally. What we wanted to cover basically is what's happening with NHC this year, what's happening with HomebrewCon. We want to talk about judging. All that kind of fun stuff. So I guess let's just start with HomebrewCon. How's plans looking for HomebrewCon this year?
As many of you have seen, either watched the show or you three on the show, it's obviously we're going virtual this year. Really, we're waiting for that 90-day window that allows this clause called force majeure, which is a fancy way of saying allows us to get out of a contract if something crazy like a pandemic is happening. And a year ago, it was an obvious decision. This year, it was kind of like, let's see how things roll out over the fall and winter. And it didn't exactly go the way I think we all were hoping. And
no, it really didn't, man.
Yeah, it was a bummer. But, I think the saving grace is that we went through the virtual thing last year pretty quickly. I think we planned it in like 5 or 6 weeks, which was a lot to do. And, this year we had a little bit more time to plan it through and learned how to put on a virtual conference last year.
That was uncharted water there.
And so I think, we have high expectations this year, and I think we're definitely ready to meet them.
Yeah, excellent.
One of the cool things last year was that people from just all over the world were able to take part, and even if you couldn't afford a plane ticket, to the U.S. to be there, there was a lot more worldwide presence, I felt, and just people that wanted to be a part of it and normally sometimes couldn't, not all of them anyway. So
the chat was really cool.
Yeah.
Like that was one of the most fun features it was actually the most seminars I've seen, because usually I'm running around doing the competition,
right?
Other stuff, but that was a cool experience for me to see seminars and live, and also just kind of tread as you said, Uncharted Waters and see that chat. That chat was really cool.
Yeah, it is almost like, we sort of make the best of things, just as human beings in general. But, homebrewers, we're sort of used to adversity and well, I spilled a bunch of stuff, so let me see if I can clean up and salvage this beer. And it's I feel like it's the same thing with the competition, right? And just the conference in general. It's like, well, we got to put it on, so let's make it the best thing that we can do right now. And then just plan for next year. So what do you think you learned last year that you're going to be leaning on heavily for this year's production?
So I think, one thing was definitely working in taking feedback from the members in the survey.
Mm-hmm.
There are a bunch of things we learned kind of internally and how to produce it from beginning to end. But as far as feedback, we wanted to see what members liked and didn't like, or what struck well and didn't strike well. The meetups were really popular. I don't know if any of you participated in those.
No, but it sounds
cool.
Drop
into those.
Yeah.
So it was just themed meetups and kind of join in into a Zoom call. And you just kind of talk about a particular theme or topic, whether it's a women's meetup or a Milk the Funk meetup or something else around that. And kind of break off into groups and talk, and then you come back and talk some more about a particular topic, or have a keynote speaker in that particular meetup.
It almost seems like more accessible, more, I was going to say inclusive, but that's not what I mean. It's more, maybe it is what I mean. I don't know. It just seems more hands-on. It seems
it's
like,
both.
You could do more, right?
A lot less across the country can drop in.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Definitely a lot less running around from hotel to conference seminar. To exhibitor,
I forgot my badge. And you're in the elevator and you got to get up the fucking thing and get your badge from your room again.
I was just sitting on my back patio and the sun just soaking it up. And let's check this out.
I'll go get another beer. I'll come back.
Yeah. At that point, we've lost John. He's at the bar. He's at the hotel bar. He's supposed to be here, but he's needed a beer for the road. Do you think you're going to do something like that when we do actually meet up in person, where you sort of have these virtual encounters? So Brian Cooper was saying, people across the world can sort of participate and maybe it'll give them the FOMO to come back the year after, right?
Yeah, I think I think there'll be a component, but I've the in-person, you can't beat the in-person thing, right?
No, you can't. Not at all.
Those interactions you have, whether you're just crossing paths going from one seminar to the next, you're at the expo hall chatting with the vendor, you're just hanging out waiting for the next session, and you see someone's badge, it says they're from a place you grew up or a place you live, and then you just strike up a conversation, and then you have a lifelong friend after that. So you can't beat that in-person experience, but it gives people a taste, that virtual component. And I think we've talked about that a lot after last year, moving forward, trying to figure out a way to smartly work that in where it doesn't feel weird or forced, but gives people an opportunity to check out something they might not otherwise want to come to in person right away.
Well, I mean, you guys have a lot of experience in community building like that, and so I think whatever you're going to do is going to be great. Just moving forward, and
like the vote of confidence.
Yeah, for sure. Well, because you guys have been doing it for so long. I mean, my first conference was 2008. And, wow. No, 2004? Shit, I can't remember now. Dallas, Fort Worth.
New Orleans, right?
I didn't go there. That's it must have been 2008. Dallas, Fort Worth is what it was.
I can't believe I know that.
2008 was Cincinnati, because that was...
Yes. Okay, so what is it, 6?
Yeah.
It must have been before 2008.
Then it was 6. Whatever. It doesn't. But 2001. Now I want to know, but I'm gonna just leave that alone. Anyways. But seeing the homebrewing community sort of grow, and it does revolve around the conferences and the competition, and I think that's very much in how you guys handle outreach for homebrewers and get people involved, and you guys do that really well, I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I think it's a culmination of everything we try to work on.
Yeah.
It culminates at the conference, but it's everything building up through that, whether it's, helping a state fix some legal issue, whether it's legislation or regulatory, or just clearing up confusion between two parties, or if it's providing homebrew club insurance so you can meet at a brewery, or providing a directory for shops or club directory for people to find a club in their area to go to someplace in person. And then we have our big events, the National Homebrew Competition and Homebrew Con, that kind of culminate all that together, and those mini communities come to make that big community at those events, which is really cool. And it's all fun and friendly.
Yeah.
It's great. It's all camaraderie. It's friendly competition as well. So
absolutely. One of the downsides about not being able to meet in person this year is that masks are one of the things that can really help alleviate the fart in the elevators.
Yeah.
And I feel like this was our chance. This was our year, guys.
Don't narrow it down to elevators, man. I'm talking the club night, the brewer's night kickoff.
My room. This was going to be our year.
Nowhere safe.
The year of homebrewers breathing easy, but apparently, anyway. Let's chat a little about the competition. John, how are you guys handling that this year with the social distancing? I'm sure that's all involved, and all that kind of cool stuff.
Yeah, incredible world-class events team helping put that on, and didn't really have a plan to do anything like this until seeing Great American Beer Festival competition put it on, and seeing how much work they did to make it happen extremely safely and as best you can. There's obviously risk gathering people together, but the amount of how stringent they were and how on top of it they were going into planning and communication wise and overall logistics and operation, it was just incredible to watch. And I participated in it because I was like, maybe this could work.
Yeah, sure.
And maybe, also just watching that competition happen in person is something really incredible. And you see 9,000 beers judged normally in 3 days. It's wild to watch and how it all just functions, all these levers and wheels.
Yeah.
So they a lot of things we did was, we have this big warehouse in Colorado where we do a lot of the sorting and keg receiving for our conferences and festivals. And we thought maybe we could use this as our judging. It has, single pass through ventilation. It's 20,000 square feet. GABF did judging in 3 weeks, 6 days a week, which is a lot to say the least.
Yeah.
We pretty much had a new group of judges come through every week, but
wow.
For this, some things we learned was we put a lot of space in between tables. I think it was 25 feet.
Good.
We're shrinking that down a little bit to fit 10 tables, but it's only 10 tables a day, 4 judges at each table.
Okay.
And the way that the structure of GABF and basically what NHC is adopting is you have 2 sessions a day and you have judge pairs judge 3 flights in parallel, so not one beer at a time. They judge all 8, 9, 10 beers at once. Feedback and then discuss with the judge after judging those beers and then move on their top 3 to the next round. So think of every category as having its own kind of March Madness bracket working its way to that final table.
Okay.
So you, so usually a category will have usually 3 or 4 rounds to get to that final table. And then you have 4 judges, choose the winner, the first, second, and third place. And things are it's over a week, so things it's a little bit more complicated than just busting it out in a couple days. But for the health and well-being, 4 judges at a table, 6 feet apart for each judge at the table, so they're kind of in this square. And then while they're judging, they have be wearing a face shield, but no mask, obviously. And then while walking around, every other person in the building is wearing a face shield and face mask at all times. Cut down on the amount of touching done. So table captains are wearing gloves. They're in the staging room. They're preparing all the beer. They bring it out. The stewards bring it out to the judges. the judges grab the cups, so minimal amount of touching.
Okay.
And then the judges have to clear their own place.
There we go. Yeah.
Which is really, you know, good learning. It's a nice paradigm shift.
There's no more steward. Yeah.
It's,
now clean yourself up.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, that's just some of the things. You know, a lot of signage, a lot of like one way street stuff going on, in and outs, and big aisles, and it's a beast for sure. It's 100 people max in that 20,000 square foot warehouse at one time is like our cap.
Wow.
And we're probably going to be closer to like 85 at one time. So really restricting, you know, that's why it's over a week, as you can't just pack it in with 250 judges and bust it.
No,
out.
Man, you can't. You can't do
I'm
it.
I'm excited for those days again. I love watching a room full of judges just blow through thousands of entries in a day. It's like, it's amazing to watch, and it's magical. it's really cool.
Yeah.
And eventually we'll get back there.
Well, and then usually when the judging is over, you have the leftover beers that didn't make it through, and then you leave those out and, you know, people go to town. What are you going to do with those this year?
That's a good question. You know, a lot of probably rewarding some of the volunteers who are going to be coming out for 7 days.
Sure, man.
Over that time, you know, we did have to up the bottle amount this year, which I knew we would hear about. But NHC, you'd have to send two the first round, three to final. It's not exactly apples to apples, and I'm not saying it is. But to make sure that we could judge the beer correctly, and I think, you know, it changes up the game some, right? So you're literally competing against everyone in the country in a category rather than your region, and then moving on to the final.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, I think it's a huge deal if you take a medal away from this. Not like it wasn't before, but you're really like, it's all in parallel. It's like, if you have the, you know, if you win gold in Pilsner, you are best Pilsner without any discrepancy of judging
what did my region do, how did they handle it, because that is sometimes too where like maybe a place gets overwhelmed, or they, you know, you hear rumors, well, they was left out, maybe this was left out for half a day and then not put in the walk-in, and people think that matters, and it's like,
or it was shipped, you know, 5 or 6 weeks ago and finally judged, or
whatever
the case may be,
whatever it is,
like, all even.
I can't
speculate. So the brewers in that area are no good. My beer is so much better against those, you know, whatever regioners.
There was a gamifying of like, you send certain entries to here because of this and certain here because of that.
Yeah.
I tried it and lost every time.
The pool is pretty diverse. We tried to make sure, you know, we weren't just using Colorado judges, obviously. And we have judges coming from all over the country.
I'm glad you got, you know, it sounds like you're getting the judge numbers you need and you're going to be good there.
It's been a lot. That's a real juggling act. I'm emailing them every week being this is the schedule I have. Confirm again.
Yeah.
Tell me you're coming. Make me feel comfortable.
this is hard to run. You know, we've done some regionals, even just the regionals. It's hard to run that and make sure everything happens smoothly and that we continue to do like doing this. It seems like, you know, you got the plan like pretty well honed and you have a good example to lean back on. It seems like you guys are doing this pretty well, and it's going to be an amazing feat when you pull it off admirably there.
Absolutely.
We will feel good the moment a final round of a category is judged. That's when I'll be like, all right, 1 of 40 done. Until then, I am on edge until we actually get those final tables judged.
Yeah.
I think it'll probably feel pretty worthwhile to the judges that go, because, you know, the entrants that are sending their beers in and shipping all those bottles, they're going to bring their A game, you know, paying that fee, getting them in there.
Yeah.
This is going to be a lot of serious brewers coming in for this. So it's probably going to be a pleasure to judge just the whole thing, I'm sure.
Yeah, people are definitely, you know, I appreciate how serious they take it. Obviously, I do as well from the organizing, and I understand the gravity of it, and it's not cheap. Like, they're paying a lot of money to enter and to ship, whether they're shipping, you know, freight or as a group or single, you know, individual entering, and We want to, the thing I hate doing the most and makes me just die inside is having to email a brewer saying we couldn't judge your beer, or your bottle's broke, or we misjudged it. That just no amount of refund really helps.
No, because it's right.
You can't replace that. It's
a moment in time. It's not just a thing. This is a month or two worth of effort.
It's a huge deal.
Yeah.
So I stress that so much in our volunteer staff that helps with sorting and check in. And, I'm out there at the warehouse pretty much all this week and next week from 7:30 to 5:30 or 6 receiving packages and making sure everything is okay.
Damn.
It started on Monday. That's when things fall into our hands.
Oh, really. Gosh. Well, you know what you do to relax? Just take a CBD gummy. Do you guys know about those? The CBDs. Oh, yeah. I don't know. Do you guys think that GABF is going to be virtual again as well this year? You leaning that way?
I'm not sure. I think we're trying to figure out what that is going to look like. And, it's hard. I think for me personally, I think it's imagining a beer festival of that size with that much kind of back and forth passing and trying to enforce some sort of health and well-being protocol with 4,000 volunteers and then 15,000 attendees per day.
Yeah.
And you're exchanging cups and, beer and people want to hug and high five. Like, that's what makes that festival amazing.
Yeah.
And if you can't, I don't know if you can really half-ass it, right?
Like, no.
It'd feel weird.
Yeah.
If you have to walk around in masks and...
I don't think you don't think you could because of the amount of cutting loose that happens there.
Right.
We've
all seen it. Three and a half hours in.
We've all been doing it.
Goes down with the glass drop. And,
yeah. Even just the bagpipes would be strange.
I miss those. I always quote there's a Lord of the Rings scene I always quote for that.
What is it?
And they're walking in and just extort my nerdiness on you when the fellowship go into Moria and they find the book and it's describing everything that happened about everyone, dying and all the skeletons, and it's like they've taken the drums in the deep, they've taken the second hall, and I usually stand up and film it with my my old coworker Matt Bowling, and it's just a weird fun tradition. Everyone has those for GABF.
Yeah. I love it, man.
There's no rhyme or reason to it. We just do it.
No, you're right. Exactly. And I never thought that I would hear anybody say, what I miss about GABF is the bagpipes. Because it's one of those things where you're in it and you're like, whoa, that came out of nowhere. Okay, here we go. And then it starts. And then afterwards you're like, it's a cool touch. Don't get me wrong. But it is in that moment. Sometimes I'm like, wow, that is very, very loud. But it starts people off, man. It gets people going, and it wouldn't be the same without them. So, I definitely know what you mean. It's that sound starts the fun.
Yeah.
It's the flag drop of the fest.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
All right, John. Well, if anybody else has any questions, fire away. If not, we'll let you split. Brian, looks like you're ready to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say I haven't seen John in person for since I think a Ghost Town, or was it? I don't know.
Yeah.
He came out, man. Judging at Ghost Town in Oakland, and Doze was running things there, and so last year was a little different. We didn't have a conference, and it would have been. I'm sure I saw you at the conference too, but it's weird not to see you around in
more,
person.
More personal at the first round, not running around. Yeah. So much.
Kudos to you because you really do put yourself out there, and you really. You're a part of the community and you go out and help people where help is needed. And it's a thankless job, I'm sure in some ways, but, rewarding hopefully to you personally in some other ways. And one of these days we'll get back to normal.
Yeah, man.
Judging.
Yeah. Thank you for that. And I really if the feel good is when people are can feel me trying to reciprocate helping them. And, I always try to have the best intention of, of our, you know, our members and homebrewers in general, really. And yeah, try to help, try to explain myself as best as possible. And hopefully people just, you know that I'm looking out for them as much as I can.
Yeah, for sure.
You guys have had to roll through a lot of changes in the last year. So, you know, that's,
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be different, but I know you'll carry on, and you got a lot of good people there still. So,
yeah. Thank you so much. Appreciate the support, guys. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah,
this is when we should all be hugging in person.
That's right. And then Brian Schar will fart, and everyone will go, "Oh, come on, face dude."
I'll be trying to show people my tattoos. People
have you,
will be like,
have
oh,
you
this
seen
is my
this?
Podcast that I don't actually talk to you in person. Okay. Yes.
That's Brian.
How many clubs next year when we can probably meet will have like a Zoom theme to their booth for club night?
Ooh.
It's gonna happen.
Or they're like even like a virtual component or some sort of pandemic thing will
something.
Probably be the majority of club night.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Count on it.
Yeah. All right, John, we'll let you go, man. Thank you very much, dude.
Cool. Thanks
I appreciate
for having
it.
Me, guys. Yeah. Just take care.
Cheers.
Thanks,
you too,
guys.
Man.
Thank you.
Bye.
Cheers.
All right, well, I think that'll do it for us.
All right.
I think we're done.
Another show down.
Yes, sir.
If you do want to sell this beer, please email brian@thebrewingnetwork.com and let us know what you got. We'd be happy to get you in the schedule for a beer on the show to be oh so carefully handled and rated and judged by Brian and I. And
that's right.
And belittled by JP. But
always belittled. Yeah, definitely. 100%.
It's crap. He's like the Simon Cowell of our group, right?
That's right. I'm taking a bath in nothing but buttermilk, extolling the virtues of not drinking this beer.
Call that beer!
Thanks again to John Moorhead from the American Homebrewers Association putting on NHC remotely, virtually this year. Again, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be a good time. So if you're not signed up to do that or registered to go or attend or whatever the term is for virtual things, go do that now. Go to the AHA website and sign up. All right, Brian, the Council of Brians is going to adjourn for a second. We're going to take a quick break. If you're listening live, give us, I don't know, a couple minutes. Brian, do you have to do anything? Brian Schar, do you have to do something weird during the break?
Probably, but I'm not going to talk about it on the air.
No, that's too bad. All right.
I appreciate that.
So give us a couple minutes. I'll get the other beers in here, and then we're going to start the show up here. So, you know, within 5 minutes. But yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
I finished my kvass, so now I need a real beer.
Yeah, a real beer. All right, everybody. Thanks a lot for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. And we'll see you soon.